All right.
Good morning, family. It is a goodness, almost emotional. It's great. It's great to be back. Just thank you. Thank you so much for staying faithful. Thank you for being great examples and great beacons of the life of who God is in a place that so desperately needs God. I'm forever indebted to the Brooklyn ministry. I can't thank you guys enough. I can do the name thing, but you know, I'm here now, so thank you, everybody. And I do want to say a very, very special thank you to Ashley Cooper. I've admired Ashton since the first time he came. He's done a great job. I just thank you, man. You've done an amazing job here. Thank you so much. So the past couple of weeks have been tough. We literally went from the idea of moving back to New York to packing a U-Haul in the house that we just purchased. In like 3 weeks, and that was 5 weeks ago. So it's been challenging, but we are extremely convinced that God is big, and God is powerful, and God is here, and God is sovereign. So though the details might be fuzzy right now, I'm convinced without a doubt that we're going to be okay. In between now and okay, I don't know if it's going to be crazy, but okay is the destination and we are on our way. So we're looking forward to that. I know that Brooklyn has, you guys have been looking at relationships, and today we're going to be looking at relationship with the lost, and by focusing on a very interesting, but extremely profound interaction that Christ has in Mark 2. You guys don't care about Mark 2. Reading from verse 13. And you guys, like we said before, keep my father in your prayers. He's actually been in the hospital since ICMC. This one will be here before that, so almost 2 weeks now. I just came from there. We were in the hospital this morning, and I'll probably be there tonight again. The cancer has spread. They did find it in his liver at this point. But again, because of God's bigness, we are always hoping for miracles, but also at the same time extremely confident that this is one of God's children. And if this is the time to go home with celebration, because he's lived a Christian life, and I think as painful as it is, both outcomes are worth celebrating. Just, you know, it will feel good. Please continue your prayers. It's a very challenging time for everyone involved. Alright. Mark 2, verse 13. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, standing at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus called him, and Levi got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said to them, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." It's an incredible passage. Mark is actually very unique and interesting in a way that, like, if you read it just from beginning to end, it almost feels like all this stuff happened in one day. It gets up immediately, and then you went immediately. It really is. It's just packed full of these incredible interactions that Jesus has with people. And this one, I think, speaks very much to Jesus' view on in relationship with the loss, but maybe in a potentially different way than how we've heard it before. Now, if we just focus on one of the characters here, Levi, the tax collector, in the tax collector's booth. Now, what this would look like at this time is essentially like a toll gate that you would have now, except where, we'll come. I drove the U-Haul from Baltimore to Long Island, and I'm used to paying the regular car tolls. I was not prepared at all for the difference. I mean, there was one toll. This little girl, she was interning there, because she had been older than 16, was like, it'll be $48, sir.
For what?
A car is a car is a car is a car. How is it more expensive than... And that's my frustration. Now, imagine what the Jewish community would be going through here. They're not making money. It's rough. The Roman government has to put on their throats. There's literally an existing tax that happened. Like, for existing, there's a tax on top of the thing that you're getting. They would come into your house and just randomly say, okay, now we're going to tax that and take it. So the fact that Levi, Jewish, has now been hired by the Roman government to get into a neighborhood that the Roman government doesn't want to be in and now take money from Jewish people, this is why the tax collectors were hated so much. It's tough for them in the first place. You're being hired by the enemy and you're taking our money. Now, and on top of that, it wasn't like the Romans like tax collectors either. They just needed someone to get in these spots to get money, and they didn't really want to go in there. So you had no friends on either side. Most of the time, you had to be unmarried because the family of whatever romantic interest you had, would be like, no, we can't have our families connected with that. So almost always, when you hear stories of tax collectors, it's an older single, but has no friends, no relationship with anyone, even the lifestyle they had decided. That's Levi. And interesting enough, Levi actually means joined or attached or connected. And of course, the joke had to have been that Levi attached himself to the enemy. He joined himself to a life of isolation, and no one wants anything to do with him. And in comes Jesus, walks in, and sees Levi he's on the clock with this lifestyle that is completely contrary to the lifestyle that God wants him to live. He's currently working at the job. You, come follow me. Thank God that Jesus doesn't look on the outside like you. Because us, this would be a garden variety, he's not open. Because everything that was shown, everything on the outside, I'm not that guy, maybe someone else, but definitely not in the lifestyle he has chosen. He doesn't want a relationship with God in no way. And Jesus says, you, Levi, come follow me. Levi was hated, he was isolated, he was seen as a failure, an enemy, attached to a destiny of meaninglessness and separation. But you know who else he was? The Apostle Matthew. Can you go to Matthew 9 real quick? Matthew 9. Let's read verse 9. Same story. As Jesus went from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. The Pharisees saw this. They asked the disciples, why did your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Now, in the Bible, the Bible is filled with significant name changes. Abram gets his name changed by God to Abraham, because Abraham means a father of many. And God says, Abraham, I'm going to make you a father of many. We're going to change your name to Abraham. Sarai gets her name changed to Sarah, because Sarah means mother of nations. And God says to Sarah, Sarai, we're going to change your name to Sarah, because you are going to become a mother of nations. Jesus looks at Simon, calls him Peter, because Peter means rock, but not rock like boulder, like rock like a foundation of a house. I'm going to build something that your confession will be, and I'm going to give you the key piece of it. You are going to be the one to explain to a lost world the foundational facts of what it takes to be in God's kingdom. Saul most likely gave that name for himself. Saul literally means, I'm such a big deal that God prays about me. That's what Saul means. And then he comes to the contact with Christ and changes his name to Paul. You know what Paul means? Insignificant. Paul means small, little, like not like, don't give me any attention. I'm small, I'm little. Just a correct contact with the power of God transforms. It does a complete metamorphosis on who you are. And as a very wise man said, don't let who you think you are get in the way of who God knows you to be. All of these cases, Abram, Sarai, Simon, Saul, Levi, they come into contact with the power of God and everything changes. But I'm just a tax collector. What could I possibly do to Christ? What could possibly want with or for me? You know my situation. You know the lifestyle I'm living. You know what I've decided to do. I'm just a tax collector. No. I see an apostle. I see a changer of the world. God, I'm just a teenager. I'm just in high school. I'm just learning who I'm trying to be. High schools are in desperate need of God. But the fact that he can decide to be a light in a literal black hole of spirituality is step one to changing the world. So the statement of I am just a teenager, before you even get to like, well, let's answer that, it's already, the flaw is in the statement from the front. You guys are the planet. You're it. So look at yourself and see what you are. Just is missing the world. Architect. I learned this way later. Children determine the environment that the family existed. I found that out literally the hard way. You guys get to determine what the culture of your family really is. If you're a joy to parent, I guarantee you your parents are going to enjoy parenting more and better than that. It's weird. But there's so much power there. And the ability to transform the entire culture of your family by your decision of what kind of example am I going to leave in this house? But God, I'm just in college. I don't have money. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life afterwards. But like I had before, when I was in high school, professor so-and-so, maybe change everything or what I want to do. God, I'm just in college. Think of what a university is. Access to the people that go home, go to their different commute, and you start to change in one person. And let that one person go somewhere else, start to change for years. And that's the difficulty of the university. In high school, you're pretty limited to geographic or from this area. I'm just in college. World changers, future leaders. Who's going to determine the politics of the place that we live in? People that are going to lead our churches in the next, within our generation. That's who you have access to. God, I'm just, I don't, exactly. That's what God doesn't need a distraction from all the others. So take your busy academic schedule, force it inside a bigger God, and what you're going to see is that just being in college is actually, that's all the raw materials we need to transform the place of church and transform the place of the people. But God, my marriage is suffering. my family is crumbling, but God, I'm just a business.
I'm just that. The same as it was last time.
All these personal failures, all these reasons for us to doubt.
So how
the crowd sees wrong. The crowd sees, yes, for a judgment.
Right, no, 3 and 4.
The crowd sees.
Which 3 and 4 are the little screens out there.
And Jesus says, no. These people are
experiencing that. We're experiencing the problems.
They're going to die.
In the Bible.
And the entire world.
And number 6 is related to this.
Is going to be near. Sizably altered.
Number 8, I think we're doing a screen of the crunch as a signal.
What about that?
Because the financial our conference monitor and our decision.
The conference monitor that is
in all of those. The transformative power of Christ
is
truly unlocked
directly.
When we stop doubting and focusing on who we are and just
it's
focus on
sorry,
said this one's 4.
3 and 4.
That's why we like to open the
alcoholic. I feel like last time it's more than if I turn on 6 right now,
I'm being honest with this guy.
Right. We're having
there's something
we're having this strong with the
transfer on
the being part. That's why it's affecting all of both that
and
that
one.
So,
more things to buy.
Yes, more things to buy, really. It's more things to buy.
Couple of years.
It's something I have to really try and resolve.
What is the university? What's kind of this spiritual hub? Actually,
how long was
all this get paid?
How long ago was this? Did y'all pay in some
right now? This one was about 10 years.
For whatever reason,
I mean, there's certain things that have been more in. Like this was brought in 4 years ago. But that's the only thing in here, really, that has changed pretty much with taking out stuff.
Well, he's himself in the trailer, like, essentially invites himself and grabs me and says, we're going to be close. We're going to be close friends. Okay? I mean, I'm in here too, so that helps.
I don't want to stop this, because something doesn't look right about this recording, but I don't want to stop it and hit up
and
mess up the thing.
Because is it because the sound or things or bumps are too low?
Yeah, it's just too evenly distributed. Even though this is coming through,
it's red right now.
Yeah, it'll go up to red and come back and down, and that's good. But it's just that looks just too. Yeah. But then I'm like, well, if I do it and mess it up, I might as well leave it because nothing will be going if it is something now. So I have to wait and see. Yeah, something just doesn't look right about it.
He goes after it, he's going after training, he's going after how do I make this work? Somewhere way down the line, they bump into.
Well, that will be a screw up.
Whitney is practically a campus minister for another group. Doing great over there, comes into contact with the true transformative nature of who Jesus is, or actually called him. And Whitney's from Uganda, and African sentimentality attachment to like one church, then say, somewhere else. You could lose whatever financial assistance you were getting. You might be homeless. And Whitney said, you know what? If this is true, then I have to change. So Whitney decides, this is it. Amidst all of the craziness, I have to give my life to this. Whitney then goes to this African meeting according to the University. And this guy, Jonathan, says, hey, my name is Jonathan. Whitney's like, oh, hey, you're coming to church. Jonathan comes to church, exactly the same situation. His family is very, very unique. This is what we believe, nothing different. Jonathan comes in the context of the transformative nature of who Jesus is, what his plan for us is to be. Jonathan gets baptized, and then now they're starting this Bible talk. Whitney then bumps into a friend of hers that she's known since she was a little kid, Benjamin. Benjamin is also someone that's he's practically full-time staff with this other group on campus. And Benjamin comes out to things, and we are 7 or 8 months wrestling through, here's what the Bible communicates about God's intent for Christianity. Benjamin's father was a pastor of this church, and died last year. So there's a lot laying on this decision for this. Benjamin got baptized 3 weeks ago. Whitney's twin sister, Brittany, why not, right? Watches all of this happen. Watches the Bible talk happen from nothing. Watches her sister change, become a completely, and Whitney was a good person. Watch her sister completely change. Watch their childhood friend, Benjamin, leave something that he was contractually obligated to be a part of. And said, hold on a second. Either you're crazy, or there's something about this that's true. And if it's the latter, I can't stay where I am. When you got baptized a week ago at ICMC, bringing up at ICMC. Because the truth is, when you truly understand who's calling you, when you really, really get that this is Jesus, Son of God, saying, come follow me, and how he transforms you, and how he intends to transform the people that you come into contact with, you don't need sermons about evangelism. You don't need evangelism campaigns or quotas. All of this stuff is, you don't need any of that, because you understand who Jesus is. You're not focused on, let me just reach out to the people. Let me just go to this. It doesn't make sense anymore. It's just this, how could I not, and it's not, let me invite someone to this event. Let me invite this person to this thing that we're doing. Actually, I think you can use that as a strategy, but it's what Myron said is people need to know God. Whitney learned about God. Well, Whitney said people need to know about God. Jonathan, Benjamin, and Brittany, when they were invited to a church, they were given a glimpse of what God's transformative power can do in their lives. And they said, yes, I want that. Let's do that instead of what we're doing now. And that's the difference, I think, between, hey, let's go out and share our faith and look at what Jesus can do in people's lives. Look at what Levi was. And just like that, yes, I'll follow you, and everything changes. And Matthew goes on to spend the rest of his life trying to convince the Jewish community that hated that Christ is the Messiah. That's what the entire book of Matthew is arguing. Saying, guys, this is the guy. Jesus is the guy. So whatever you thought you had going good for you, whatever you were holding on to before, that's not it. Jesus is what we need to hold on to. That's what God's intent for our relationship with Allah is supposed to be. It doesn't matter what you're holding on to. God's plan is for you to be transformed into this. It's a place of purpose and hope and love and meaning and a true relationship with Him. You can't put a quota on that. You can't put goals on that necessarily. Because how can you cap Christ? How can you put a limit on the ability of how much God can transform? It doesn't work that way when you truly understand who is calling you. If you watch the news at all, the world is in desperate need of hope, in desperate need of love, in desperate need of purpose, in desperate need of Jesus. We need a lot less Facebook statuses complaining about what's going on, and a lot more people that are showing people, this is what you need. You need God. I have not met not one person that decided to get to transform their lives because of social media. If you're that person, please talk to me after that. I don't make that point anymore. From what I've seen, here's the status of the world. Like this. Comment, share. Okay, and then what? Then more people get to see how bad things are. You're right. That's an accurate understanding of the power of social media. We need people to bring love, hope, purpose, and Jesus into people's lives, and that's what transforms. That's what changes. That's what switches all of this stuff around. Not like this status is. And that's what Jesus did for Levi. Follow me. Now, follow me in English can just mean I'm going this way, come on. In Aramaic, it would have sounded a lot like enlist or pledge, where it's not this like physical act of just trailing where you're going. The statement implies, well, I'm going to have to do some different things. You can't pledge into a fraternity, for instance, and just, oh, cool, I pledge allegiance to you guys. Great, thanks for the invitation. You've got to do some pretty crazy stuff, which I would advise no one participate in at this juncture of the culture of Greek life. Or enlist in the military. You're not just going to follow the recruiting agent. Where, no, you'd be like, your life is about to be very, very different. Follow me means you have to change your identity. You actually have to change who you are. And in a world that says hold on to who you are, you got to remember that Jesus is better. That's it. If that's not the case, it's not worth following. It's just not logical. If Christ is not better than whatever you have going on right now, you have no business following. But if he is, logically, you have to stop doing what you're doing. You have to change who you are. You can't just go to church more. You can't just read more Bible. You actually have to, like, real life change the makeup of who you are if you're going to follow him. Pledge, enlist, follow. It screams identity change. You know what Matthew means? Gift of God. He goes from being attached to this destiny of you got enough to now you are the gift of God. Instead of focusing on the fact that they literally had the Son of God in this house, the New England Pharisees instead went to him. Sorry, they're so similar. The team of the law compared to those guys were outside hating. That's kind of just what haters do. Why does he eat with sinners? In this house, just transform Levi's life. Transform his life. Why does he eat with sinners? If we're a little bit question for a second. Remove the fact that, you know, that it's a question, and just look at the statement. Jesus eats with sinners. Now we're not asking why. We're looking at why. Jesus eats with sinners. Eating at this time, and even now, with someone, it was an act of initial befriendment. Let's be friends, let's eat together. Or prove to an already established friendship that because we're friends, we're eating together. Now, some of the people in the Baltimore campus decided that we're going to read the Bible cover to cover and essentially post commentary on every verse at the end. And I got to tell you, it was very discouraging through Genesis and Exodus. The first like 4 or 5 books. It was very discouraging. Because it's constantly God saying, hey, let's be friends. And man saying, no. Adam and Eve. God says, hey, here's everything you ever need to be satisfied. Everything. Let's be friends. You know what? Nah. Thanks. But there's more that I want than your friendship. So I'm going to go ahead and do that as well. Cain and Abel. Just all you got to do is take what God has given you and give a portion of it back, not necessarily to him, but just as an understanding of how grateful you are. You know what? I'm just going to go ahead and kill the higher standard. Because I don't have this idea of like being poor and having all my heart, I'm not sure what I'm going to say. God says, let's take these people out of slavery and captivity. Because I want to be friends. And God
you had a house and food and everything great, and now this friendship with you are walking and with the same food over and over again. I don't know if this is very much. And then he takes them out, and then you know what? The ultimate, maybe they'll get it if I give them my son. Maybe they'll finally understand how serious I am about befriending these people if I give them my child, and they even have to experience color so that he can feel a need to teach them. This is a guy that created nourishment as an idea. And let's go ahead and have you experience the need to have food in yourself to even befriend these people. That's not how I would be made. You played me this many times, we're not meeting today. You hurt my feelings this many times, I'm not going out of my way to sacrifice my child to befriend you. So it's not so much a why does Jesus eat with sinners, as much as it is a statement of, look at the God we worship. He eats with sinners. When he has all excuses in the world to say, not you guys, okay, I'm fine. I gave you your chance, and you constantly said no. So, again, forget the why. Look at the statement. Through all of this, Jesus goes out of his way to befriend us. The question then becomes, are you willing to eat with him? That's the shift. It doesn't matter. He's chosen to eat with us. Cool. He's made himself available to send the appointment. The food's there. He's waiting. Are you willing to befriend him? In the crucifixion story, we read about Peter, right? He's out there. Jesus, I'll die for you. I will never turn my back on you. Hey, don't you know that guy? I've never met him. I have no idea what he's talking about. He was the most popular person in the city. Never heard of him. And the chance that he had to befriend Christ and suffer the consequences. Peter says, I'm good. We need to sometimes make ourselves uncomfortable in order to befriend and eat with Christ. Which is easy on Sundays. It's easy here. With everyone here. You're here. Almost by definition, you're feeding, you're taking the word of God, and you're befriending, you're in the living room, and you're interacting. The challenge becomes Monday morning, Saturday evening, and everything in between. That's where the are you going to befriend Christ comes into play. My junior year of college, this class, Bible and Literature. Yeah, it was an English class, it wasn't a religious course. It was an English class that was advertised where we are going to analyze the Bible as a work of literature. So the character development, and I'm like, I don't have to do any of the readings. I read the Bible, that's like what I do. So this is going to be cake. It's a 7 o'clock class, Monday and Wednesday, from 7 to 10:30. But this should be the easiest course I'll ever take. I've literally been studying for a long time. This is gonna slide by. Day one. My mom said, don't take the class. And I'm like, how long has it been since you've been published? You don't understand that what they put in the description is what's in the class. That's how it works nowadays. First day. Sit down, take roll. The lady says, I just need you to raise your hand if you believe in God. I'm the guy. She goes on to explain how belief in the God of the Bible and mental disability are kind of the same thing. And that you can't honestly call yourself a student trying to gain knowledge of how things work and possibly believe in this fairy tale concept. Day one. And we go at like, it's early, so I'm already kind of like cranky. It's a 3.5 hour class. She promised the break. We never saw that break. That break never came. 15 minutes, false. That was, it was only a 3.5 hours. And one day, she says, okay, 1 second, let's just believe this is not good stuff about the whole test. Let's just think about how real life works for us. This Jesus character dies and gets resurrected. That's it. Maybe in Hollywood, maybe in video games, but let's be honest. This never happened. So, good movement expectations, right? I raised my hand, and I was a professor with a Jewish. I said, Miss, I'm more of a statement than a question. The Holocaust didn't matter. Wait. And I said, well, and because I've done some research that proves, or tries to prove, that it's actually a bunch of doctored photos used for propaganda to make Germany look way worse than it actually were, compared to everyone else. And now I'm sweating. I wiped it. There was no gradual book right there. Now, I'll also say that I got complained about this. I did way more than what I was told. But I did get input. I got advice. And then what I said was good. So, well, here's what I'm trying to say to this. I ain't dumb, you know. I'm sorry for whatever that caused. But, and I also genuinely do believe that the atrocities that took place during this horrific time in human history, I actually think it did. I think it's very sad, and it's a horrible state of where humanity can go. I think it did happen. But let me tell you something. There are people that I know personally, you may not know them, but you definitely know them, that I know personally that have decided to live their lives based on the reality Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. And I think, and even though I don't think you're in wanting to do this in front of the class, I have no problem talking to you afterwards about the historical facts that, and you don't have to believe who Christ is, but this Christ character lived, died, and was resurrected, period. Historical fact. Like that's just, that happened, and you are in ignorance, you're not believing. And if you'd like to talk more about that, while we can talk afterwards. But you can't let this class think that from a place of authority, you can talk about this like that. And I can't let this class think that there are people that aren't going to stand up for this. So we can talk later, but I can't just have your voice. There's no way. So that was, I would love to say that was kind of my character and attitude throughout college. I was very frustrated with this class, and that kind of came out. But I think someone's going to have to stand up for this, right? Like someone's going to have to say, no, Jesus is my friend. I'm not going to let you play him like this. I'm not going to let you talk about the guy that changed everything about me, like, especially if it's true. It's not a fairy tale. It's not like some Pinteresty idea that, like, feels good. No, this is real life. Take a time machine back, you see Jesus dying. That happened. Like a person died, and I had to change my life because of it. Don't talk crazy about Christ like that. There's no way. Because he's my friend. And he's my friend because he decided to befriend me. And I can't have to talk about people like that. And I think that attitude, minus the vision, I did cross the line. Minus the disrespect, if I was able to take that same indignation, you're not going to play Jesus like that, and I put that in my mind as a barometer for where my thoughts are allowed to go, I can't disrespect Christ by entertaining this thought. I take and play the sacrifice of the Creator of man's son by how I conceive of this area. I can't do that. I can't be less than thinking about other women with a bleeding Jesus in my head. As a friend of his, I can't do that. So sure, he's gone out of his way as a friend. I think there are times when we see what they want from the guys, that those moments of like, I'm standing from the crowd, we're like, we'll do that, but the presence is you. And no one else is going to know. Are you willing to push your foot down? So I will not entertain that love. I will not participate in that activity. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to play Christ like that. That's the example that Christ gives to us by what he does for us. That's what he intends for us to do as well. Are you willing to befriend Jesus in the same way that he does? The final paper for this talk is actually right. It's 25 page. It's 25 page, like, intensive, based on the inconsistencies and the details of the gospel. Explain why Christ's narrative can't be taken as a story. My grade is actually this. I was going to write two papers. I was going to write one paper. Like, here's what you want. I'll mark it. So you're going to lie on whatever you want. Here's what you grade this one. Another paper, here's what I actually do. I'm not going to write two papers. So I wrote the paper of, well, actually, if you look at this, the way that oral tradition was carried through human history, the sign of this is false, and the details are exactly the same. That's when it was like, let's come together and make stuff up and get every single detail like that. That's just not how humans do. The fact that there's different nuances and different recollections and the timeline is slightly different is actually a validation of the truth of the unity and harmony of the gospel. I wrote that paper, I got an A minus in the class. Triple minus without spite. It was a great paper. It was a really, really good paper. It really was. I thought that should have been the best grade that I got in college. But again, Jesus sees us in our boots, on the job, on the clock, working full time in sin, and says, though everyone else sees you in this state, though you see yourself in this state, it's all. I'm going to change who you are. And then he comes to his house and meets with him. Befriending. Like, not just like follow me and I'm master and you have to say, no, I'll be my friend. Sure, I'm in charge, but let's eat together. Let's exist. So let's work on this stuff together. And we have to then decide, do we accept that invitation? You can say yes, Jesus. I would love that. Thank you for the invitation. I'm willing. Whatever you want, let's meet. Let's spend time. Let the people know that you're our friend. The world is going to happen. And we have a relationship. And I desire nothing more than pleasing you. And we take that approach to the living God wants that to want us. It's not just people, Bible studies, and families, and church membership. It's the transformative nature of God that we can participate in, just like someone did that before us. You realize that if I did that story from my writing, to Benjamin and Edward. If you trace your conversion back far enough, you get to Pentecost. You get to actually, like, first name, last name, address of the people that were involved right now to Pentecost. People that saw Jesus. And we take us, and forever, however much longer the world has to go forward, it should be that just as powerful. It can't stop here. It could stop you. I can't leave here. Oh, God, thank you. And then goes back to where he's from. He's got to change everything, bring more people into this change. And that is God's plan for Christianity. The Holy Spirit. And we get a chance to participate in how amazing that is.
also serving on the back of the board. What I see, if you get a chance to go over it, greater than bringing the boards up on the answer, I want that. There's a purpose, there's hope, there's love, there's real meaning in that. We can all hold on to that. I guarantee your workplace, your complex, wherever you come in contact with, will change because it's on fire. That's what it means. I'm extremely excited to be able to be here and see this happen. I can't wait. It's going to be tough for that stuff to be structured and to be challenging. But there's a way to do that. Just like you did here.